I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we will talk about the debt we owe the planet. Earth Day is supposed to help us focus on the challenges facing us in terms of protecting the environment. Today, we will take stock of the gains made and the work still to be done in regard to environmental conservation. We will talk about all of this with Stephen Sellers, Executive Director of Earth Day in Indiana, Carrie Hamilton, Executive Director of the Indiana Recycling Coalition, David Forsell, President of Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, and you. You can join the discussion by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending comments or questions via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Please do let your voice be heard in this important conversation. First, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking about Earth Day Indiana and the environment today, and we're fortunate to have as our guest Stephen Sellers, executive director of Earth Day Indiana. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Well, John, thanks so much for having us here today. We really appreciate it.
Glad to have you here. Carrie Hamilton, who's the executive director of the Indiana Recycling Coalition. Carrie, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you here. David Forsell, who is the president of Keep Indianapolis Beautiful. David, good to have you.
Hello.
That's enthusiastic. There's some energy here. Well, let's talk a little bit. I know, Stephen, your organization's got a big event on Saturday, so we probably ought to advance that a little bit and talk a little bit about what's happening on Saturday. Could you give us a preview?
I sure can. We're doing our 22nd annual Earth Day Indiana Festival, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at White River State Park, 801 West Washington Street in downtown Indianapolis.
Feel free to give that again so that people get it.
White River State Park, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, 801 West Washington Street. That's the corner of West and Washington Street, downtown Indianapolis.
Great. And what all are you going to be doing there?
We've got 140 conservation and environmental exhibits, great music, good food, special activities for kids, all under tent, packed into 5 action hours.
And how many people do you have helping with this?
We've got more than 150 volunteers. And as I said, 140 exhibits, which is fantastic. Give us a day like today and we'll have more than 30,000 people downtown.
Oh, man, that is phenomenal. Well, I said in the setup for the show that Earth Day really is designed to be kind of a stock-taking holiday about what we're doing, acknowledging gains and losses in terms of where we are in terms of protecting the environment. And I guess I'd like to start our discussion by doing that. I also would like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or a question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Carrie Hamilton, what is the state of environmental protection here in central Indiana right now?
Well, John, first I want to say that the Indiana Recycling Coalition is thrilled to be able to table at Stephen's great event this Saturday, so good. We're looking forward to that. The state of recycling in particular in Indiana is, frankly, it's not great. We've got a lot of room to improve. Historically, across Indiana, we have not invested the sorts of resources that many states have in our recycling infrastructure and programs at the community level. So we've got work to do still.
And what are the holdups there? What are the issues?
Well, a few things. First of all, at the state level, our funding historically has been fairly low compared to other states. For example, our recycling dollars from the state come from a 50-cent tipping fee at the landfill for every ton of material that goes into a landfill or our incinerator. 50 cents is charged, and that goes to fund recycling programs and investment in infrastructure. Some states charge upwards of $10 a ton, and those dollars go to invest very significantly in community-based recycling programs and education that we have not been able to provide significantly in Indiana.
I know just from traveling there that and having good friends in the area that Seattle, for example, and I don't know if they still do this because it's been a while since I've been out there, took a much different approach to recycling. What they would do is say, we will come and pick up your recycling, in effect, free, but we are going to charge you for every bit of trash that you deliver. And it was a way of attempting to alter the mindset. Is that a successful approach? Is it a way that it is a different mindset, obviously, than what we do here?
Yes, John. Actually, many major cities in the country and smaller communities across the country, including some in Indiana, have that sort of system. It's called pay as you throw. So you pay for higher quantities of trash, and recycling is covered. There's a cost to recycling, but the municipality doesn't expose the resident to that fee as a separate fee like we do, for example, right now in Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's tax supported.
Yeah.
So in some ways we are paying. But
yeah,
it is,
And there are various ways to skin that cat. Some communities have other types of incentive-based programs. There's also a basic economic factor that's different in Indiana, partly because of that fee I mentioned earlier, but for other reasons as well, where in Indiana our waste disposal is relatively very inexpensive. In communities on the West Coast, including Seattle, it could be upwards of, I don't know exactly what it is in Seattle, but it could be in the $100 range per ton versus more in the average of $20 a ton in Indiana. So obviously that impacts the economics of recycling at the local level.
David Frisell, what do you think the state of environmental protection is here in central Indiana?
I think, like Carrie, there's room for improvement. At Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, we have a unique and a wonderful perspective because we see thousands of people interested week in and week out from a voluntary standpoint. I'm encouraged. I tend to be a rather hopeless optimist in some ways, but I'm quite encouraged by a number of different things. This mayor has done some wonderful things in terms of creating an office of sustainability that is new to this city. They're looking at policy matters in a variety of areas that I think are just terrific, related particularly to energy and also to water. So that's very encouraging. There's clearly
what sort of initiatives, real quickly?
Sure.
If you wouldn't mind.
Sure. So, for instance, stormwater is a really big deal here in Indianapolis. What, pardon me, listeners, what we flush and what comes from the sky are handled by the same system. Mm-hmm. And so what we often find is during even modest rain events, sewage gets into our river and into some of our waterways. That's a big deal and a big problem. So policies and guidelines have been set up in city government, actually, to encourage developers and redevelopers to take a look at their practices, particularly as it relates to how they're treating grounds and properties and how it is that one can landscape to keep stormwater on site rather than having to be managed by a system. That's costly. It also creates, of course, some of these sewage overflows that we're talking about. And then from an energy standpoint, there's still a ways to go, but even at the city county building and a number of other buildings around the city, they're doing good things to sort of retrofit to save energy. I'm encouraged, too, by the Super Bowl project and what's happening there. They're doing a lot of tremendous work. We're privileged to be part of a lot of tree planting efforts. I know Carrie has some involvements with the Super Bowl as well.
Actually, I think one of her representatives called when we did our Super Bowl show on that.
And then food. I think the other thing, you know, if you take a look at some of these broader issues, there's clearly a developing interest in growing local food. That, of course, has any variety of impacts. The one that is particularly interesting, of course, is human health. And then miles associated with vegetables and fruits. And so we're seeing all over the city a significantly growing interest in growing food.
Carrie Hamilton, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I want to add on to David's thoughts about Indianapolis in particular. We're a statewide organization, but of course Indianapolis is an important city for our state. And I didn't mention earlier, so I want to mention now that there is some exciting progress on the recycling front in our city. There's been a pilot project on the northeast side, and just reported this morning, I was excited to hear, I was actually interviewed by the reporter yesterday, so I heard then, that a large percentage of folks who received recycling bins for curbside program in a pilot project have decided to keep those bins and pay that extra fee to do so because recycling is important to them. So there is a really strongly growing public interest in recycling and being able to have convenient recycling in our city.
What's the biggest challenge in front of Central Indiana? We can broaden it to the state. I think two of you are state-based organizations, and David, your focus is on the state's largest city. So what is the largest environmental challenge facing us right now? Stephen Sellers.
It's hard to pick just one. We have made significant progress in the last 40 years in improving the quality of the air we breathe and the water we drink. But each of those is each faces challenges. We need to continue to improve the quality of air, and we reduce that we protect that by reducing carbon emissions. So we've got to have significant changes in the way that we heat, that we fuel our vehicles. In addition to that, that's going to help our water quality, because what goes up does come down, and that does threaten our rivers and streams, and much of what goes into them. If you've seen around the country a big debate on fracking, where they're going underground to look for natural gas, there's some real challenges there as far as how to get hard-to-find natural gas in a way that is not only sustainable, cost-effective, but doesn't pollute. So we've got a whole host of issues related to those basic things, the air we breathe and the water we drink.
Carrie Hamilton.
John, I want to make a Stephen mentioned carbon emissions, and some interesting facts came out of USEPA a few years ago that really solidified the recycling community's awareness of the connection between sustainable materials management, which means reducing, reusing, recycling, and composting as much as we can, and carbon reductions. It turns out 42% of U.S. carbon emissions comes from the stuff of our economy, so everything that can be reduced, reused, recycled, and composted. And we know from that research that a significant amount of those reductions can be reduced if we properly manage our materials, if we manage them sustainably. So there's a real opportunity in Indiana that has high per capita carbon emissions to reduce those emissions via waste reduction, reuse, recycling, and composting.
We are talking about Earth Day and the environment right now with our guests, Stephen Sellers, Carrie Hamilton, and David Forsell. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimitswfyi.org, or sending comments or questions via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We actually have gotten a question via Twitter. It says, there are a number of faith-based groups that are getting involved in the idea of Earth Day and care for the Earth. For instance, my church, Cumberland First Baptist, is having a Good Friday service and a celebration of Earth Day in the same evening. What advice do you have for faith-based groups that would like to be more involved in a sustainable practice and care for Earth issues? That question comes from Danielle. I'll start with you, David Forsell.
Sure. Yeah, this is very exciting. I spent a number of years ago enough time in seminary just to be dangerous. And, you know, 10 years ago or so, this notion of creation care, in fact, in many ways was threatening
to a lot of care?
Folks. And
what is
creation
care? Well, explain the concept.
Sure.
Live with it all the time.
Sure. You know, my perspective and what I learned at seminary, of course, was from a Christian perspective, a Judeo-Christian, I guess I would say. You know, Genesis is often looked at as a demotivating sort of piece because the notion of human dominion over the rest of creation is often what's picked up. If you take a look at Genesis 2:15, you find that, in fact, really the first human vocation was to tend and to care for the garden that is the creation. Faith-based organizations are picking up on that, everything from energy savings to waste reduction to voluntary opportunities. There's so many ways to enact and to activate that faith, and KIB is one of those places where churches and faith-based groups are doing that.
We are talking about Earth Day and the environment here on No Limits. I'm John Kroll. Our guests are Carrie Hamilton, David Forsell, and Stephen Sellers. I'd like to say that No Limits is part of our local programming at WFYI Radio, and it's made possible by your support. If you've made a contribution during our spring pledge drive, we thank you. If not, please consider supporting WFYI and our local programming, our news, and such shows as No Limits, Film Sociology, The Economics Club of Indiana, The Art of the Matter, Stolen Moments, and Blues House Party. You can call in your pledge at 1-800-233-0020 or make a donation online at WFYI.org. Please do contribute to these programs. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking today about Earth Day and the environment. We're fortunate to have as our guest Stephen Sellers, executive director of Earth Day Indiana, Carrie Hamilton, who's the executive director of the Indiana Recycling Coalition, David Forsell, who is president of Keep Indianapolis Beautiful. We're talking about the challenges facing the environment. We're also getting some specific questions because the event that's coming up is Earth Day Indiana. Stephen's organization is celebrating it on Saturday. And we've gotten a question from a listener who identifies himself or herself as Standard Record, and it just says, why did Earth Day Fest move to White River from the Legion Mall? Is there, can you speak to that concern? We like to provide immediate gratification to our listeners here and get them the information they want.
I sure can, John, and that's a great question. We had been at the American Legion Mall for many years, and an opportunity became available to move to the premier site in Indiana, and that's White River State Park. It is a beautiful venue surrounded by museums and the Indianapolis Zoo. And we did that last year. It was fantastic, and people loved it. It's the place to be and the place we're going to be for many years to come.
Thanks for the answer. We are talking about Earth Day and the environment, and I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Dan, I understand you're calling from Noblesville. Dan, are you with us?
I hope so.
Yes, you are. Good. Sorry, there's a slight hesitation there. I understand you have a comment. Could you share your comment or your question?
Yes, I just wanted to share that in Noblesville, I'm the chairperson of Keep Noblesville Beautiful, and we've had a great success working with the city. The city has been very involved with our efforts. Many of our board positions are filled by individuals who work in different capacities for the city, for the street department or water treatment systems. And what we've done is more grassroots. We do a spring and fall blitz where we target a specific neighborhood and work on not just assisting them to clean up their area, but also in educating them on recycling and just the positives.
And is that approach, how long have you been doing this, Dan?
Keep Noblesville Beautiful began in 2007. We're into our fifth year. We also distribute trees on Arbor Day on the Noblesville Courthouse Square. We've given away over 1,000 seedlings. And the Neighborhood Blitz, as I said, is twice a year.
Well, thank you for sharing that. We're going to talk about other approaches that work around here. Thanks, Dan. So what we hear here is that they have a slightly different approach. I think one of the things that that we've sort of talked around so far in this program is the role really of government versus sort of volunteer efforts, and you know, the intersection of public policy and civic spirit, for lack of a better term. Which approaches and which places are we seeing that done most successfully? I'm going to throw this to Carrie and Stephen first, because I think as statewide organizations, you probably have a little broader perspective on communities that are really doing well and others that are lagging. Carrie, your thoughts.
Well, I'm going to kind of answer broadly, John. I think for Recycling Indiana, as I've said, you know, we just haven't put enough resources towards recycling and recycling infrastructure in our state. And I think it's time for a dialogue in Indiana about how are we going to move forward. We know, I'm going to mention a staggering fact that so far in the U.S. this year, in less than 4 months, 40 billion beverage containers, that's soda, cans, bottles, have been disposed of as trash or litter. Have not been recycled. 40 billion beverage containers. So we've got a lot of opportunity to improve recycling and so much to do in Indiana. So that conversation needs to involve how does government need to be involved? Do we need more funding from state government? Do we need more funding from local government? Can we reasonably expect to get that? Maybe not. There are policy opportunities in the area of producer responsibility. In Indiana, we already have a producer responsibility law for electronics. And what that simply means is that manufacturers are paying to some extent for the end of life of that product. Those policies are in place in Europe and Canada for all recyclable materials. Maybe that's part of the solution in Indiana. Some states, as you know, have a bottle deposit law where residents pay a deposit, get that feedback when they take the material back to be recycled. There are also, in some states, North Carolina has a bar and restaurant recycling requirement. So that's certainly a state policy. Government is involved there. So different ways to skin a cat. We think about statewide solutions, and maybe Stephen or David have more of thoughts about local and volunteer involvement.
Well, and I guess what triggers this is that David said earlier in the program that we're seeing some new initiatives out of the mayor's office that have actually helped change the climate, you know, politically to some degree, and created a new set of possibilities in terms of environmental outreach. Are we seeing other places in the state, Stephen, where that sort of initiative is occurring?
What strikes me more than anything is that in the 70s in particular, and even the late 60s, we saw some significant environmental legislation that continued for a little time, and then that's pretty much stopped from a national perspective, and even in most states, not all states, but in most states. And what we've seen develop in the meantime that's going to help us is a more market-driven approach where people want more environmentally conscious things. Businesses develop and create things in response to that. We've seen a change in the fuel efficiency standards from the federal government, which was done by the administration, but we're going to be seeing people purchase those cars, and you're going to see more cars develop as a result of that, particularly with high fuel prices.
Yeah, with gasoline hovering at $4 a gallon and all of that.
Exactly. In our business, Earth Day Indiana, what we have noticed in the past 6 years is a significant increase in green businesses. There are people out there looking for a market, creating products that meet a demand. And in some cases, that's energy efficiency. It may be wind. It may be solar. We've got a whole industry that's on the verge of being developed. Government action could help do that. In absence of that, eventually, high prices and consumer demand will force that direction.
Well, although, and I guess the reason I'm pursuing this line of questioning to some degree is I remember hearing former President Bill Clinton analyzing really what happened with the economic downturn that we're still in the process of attempting to emerge from. And his argument, in some ways, it was a self-indictment because he said, you know, as an economy, we made a lot of money in the 90s, and because people had, you know, acquired all of this, they needed a place to invest it. If we'd invested it in green technology, we would have made even vaster fortunes. Instead, people sunk it into real estate, created a bubble, and it popped. And in the way that he was explaining this, there was some level of self-indictment, but he's since said repeatedly, you know, the next wave of really great fortunes is going to be people who have figured out ways for us to maintain something resembling our current lifestyle in a more green and energy efficient way. Stephen Sellers, you are nodding your head emphatically over there. So,
No, that's right on point. The future of jobs in this country will not be based on a carbon economy. Mm-hmm. You know, those jobs are going to be in the third world. And unless we want a third world lifestyle, we're not going to have those. However, if we develop green technologies in this country, we're going to see an expansion of good-paying jobs. And it's going to take government action to steer us in that direction. And when you do that, prices on things drop significantly, jobs are created. And not only do we create jobs and improve the economy, we got cleaner air to breathe, and that's not a bad thing.
No, I can see everyone wants to talk on this subject. I'll let Carrie Hamilton go first, and then David Frisell, please.
Okay, thank you. Talking about jobs, green jobs. Indiana has tens of thousands of Hoosiers that are employed in the manufacture of glass, plastic, steel, aluminum, and paper. All of those commodities are highly recyclable. Those business sectors, those manufacturers in Indiana are coming to us as they look for more recycled material. They're not finding it in Indiana, despite the population that should generate it, that does generate the material, because it's not being collected as recyclables. Instead, they're having to go out of state, out of region for those commodities, and they're looking for the recycled material because it does take so much less energy to make their new product out of the recycled material versus the raw material. Those raw materials, of course, also often come from far distances. So the economics of getting the material from our Indiana communities just get better and better every day, especially with those increased travel costs, transportation costs. We've got an opportunity to strengthen our manufacturing sector in Indiana by recycling more.
David Frisell, I'll let you have the last word.
Oh, sure. Yeah, well, back to some of this, I think you asked, you know, mm-hmm. what needs to happen in terms of, does there need to be more government investment? What is government's role? I think it's going to take everybody. I think we're in an exciting time for things that we focus on every day. This notion of shared value, I used to sort of call it triple bottom line, corporations are getting more and more focused on how it is that they can be profitable, but also create value for the communities that they're in and create environmental benefit, either with their corporate social responsibility budgets or more specifically to some of their primary purposes for existing. Great example of this. Probably ticked a few people off when the federal government said, yes, you can shut down Interstate 70 for a day. We did that last fall. It was a great partnership between NDOT, Eli Lilly and Company, and us, where now there are 18 acres naturalized along an interstate that was providing very little value. Lilly had a great experience and provided the vast majority of the funding. And 8,000 people had a terrific civic experience.
How large was the funding on that?
Total funding was over $1 million for that project. And we see it in small ways, too. Back to the jobs thing, I'd like to say that our number one mission objective here in Indianapolis is about trees. And we are not just planting trees for pretty, but we're targeting it based on neighborhood value. We're creating jobs for young people. And so this notion of shared value amongst the variety of sectors is something that is not just a pipe dream. It's happening, and I think the trend is going in the right direction.
Nikki, I understand you've got a question about recycling.
Hi. Yes,
hi.
I live in an apartment in Indianapolis. And I was just wondering, where's the best place for me to take my recycling?
What part of Indianapolis, I suspect, will be the next question?
Well, towards Central.
Towards Central downtown Indianapolis?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
towards
I think.
The Butler-Tarkington neighborhood, actually.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Happy to answer that.
Yeah, please,
that.
David.
Yeah. Probably the nearest drop-off location for you is at Watson Road in Fairfield. There is a double eight right there where you can take your recycling. Also would encourage you to get onto – we probably should talk about a couple of websites. KIBI.org has a really wonderful resource list for recycling, just about anything you can imagine in the city. As we continue to progress in the city with recycling, in the meantime, you know, there's opportunities in a variety of places to get a lot of things done. So check out our website, and I think Carrie has something to say about
this. Yes, Carrie,
yeah,
please.
Thanks. Outside of Marion County, well, including Marion County, I would say that KIB definitely has the best resource. Statewide, we have a new website, IndianaRecycles.org, where you can put in your address and find local drop-off locations for all sorts of materials as well.
Nikki, thank you for the call.
All right, thank you.
Take care. I want to talk a little bit about also, David, when you were talking earlier about the initiatives coming out of the mayor's office. Has the discussion of environmental issues evolved to a degree? I mean, it seems at some level it is almost post-partisan now. And that is that a fair assessment? You're in the trenches, and I'm presuming you've got to work with representatives from both parties. Is that fair, David?
Sure. Yeah, and I want to make sure that I sure don't speak for the city of Indianapolis. We're a charitable nonprofit, but we work really closely with the city. I don't think we're quite post-partisan yet in that I don't think there's broad consensus, probably not the breadth that any of us would like to see. However, I do believe that things are going in the right direction. Former Mayor Bart Peterson sort of got a lot of these things rolling with what he called the Indy Green Print, which was getting some smart people around the table to understand what is the preferred future for our city related to environmental quality. And Mayor Greg Ballard has taken that and built upon it and expanded upon it. To now where there are feet on the ground, there are seven or eight people in this Office of Sustainability. So I think in Indianapolis, it's fair to say Mayor Ballard being a Republican and leading on a variety of sustainability things is absolutely advantageous for a broader conversation, if that's fair.
And
Carrie Hamilton.
I would agree with David that we still have some work to go, but we've definitely made some progress at the state house level. Still some progress to be made, but a good example in the electronics law that the Indiana Recycling Coalition championed 2 years ago, we had strong bipartisan support for that very effective electronics law. So you know, we've got some good examples, and we're definitely making progress.
Caller, this is John Kroll. How are you doing?
I'm well. I just happened to tune. Listen, I wasn't planning to call in, but I had to respond.
Please.
My name's. Yeah, I'm in the solar energy business in Indianapolis.
Okay.
And I heard one of your panelists say that the carbon-based jobs are going to the third world. Is that an accurate?
Yes,
statement?
I think that was Stephen Sellers. Is that an accurate assessment, Stephen, of what you were saying?
Yeah, I think we've been seeing that for the last 20, 30 years or so.
Well, I want to kind of enlighten you on what's going on really in the so-called third world, or the more accurately the developing world. We're seeing projects, we're designing projects throughout Africa and Latin America and in Central Asia, and particularly we've got associates in China that they are embracing renewable energy much faster than we are in this country. And the reason for one of this, a couple of reasons for that, in particular because they've never really, most of these areas have never really had a huge investment in infrastructure based on carbon or, you know, the utility grids that we have in the West and in Europe. And so they have no particular commitment to these, to the carbon-based economy. Now, they do, in fact, they use those generators a lot, but those generators are small and portable, and they can be gotten rid of very quickly once they embrace renewable energies, which they're doing at a much faster rate than we're doing in Indiana and throughout the United States. And so when we assure ourselves that at least we're ahead of the so-called third world, that is not going to be the case very long, because their momentum is much faster at moving into renewable energy and the advantages. Most of your panelists understand the advantages of renewable energy, but they don't understand. People listening to this program should know that the energy economy, coming energy economy of the 21st century, is in fact going to be based on renewable energy. You know, whether people
Which, to be fair, I think actually is the point they were making.
Yep.
I think is the point that they were making, and I think if nothing else, what your comments illustrate is how quickly this dialogue and debate are evolving over time and that the dynamics are constantly shifting. Thank you for contributing to the conversation. You are listening to No Limits. We're talking about Earth Day and the environment. No Limits is part of our local programming at WFYI Radio, and it's made possible by your support. If you've made a contribution during our spring pledge drive, we thank you. If not, please consider supporting WFYI and our local programming, our news, and shows such as No Limits, Film Sociology, The Economic Club of Indiana, The Art of the Matter, Stolen Moments, and Blues House Party. You can call in your pledge at 1-800-233-0020 or make a donation online at WFYI.org. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking about Earth Day, Indiana, and the environment. Our guests today are Stephen Sellers, executive director of Earth Day Indiana, Carrie Hamilton, executive director of the Indiana Recycling Coalition, David Forsell, president of Keep Indianapolis Beautiful. We've gotten a question from a caller who didn't want to go on the air. The caller says that he or she is finally recycling and wants to know where to take things like cereal boxes and then also where to take plastics and what is the difference between number one and number two plastics. And I'm thinking, Carrie Hamilton, that's a question that probably you are best situated to answer.
All right. Well, let's see. So to answer the first question, I think back to what the websites David and I directed folks to earlier, and I think for an Indianapolis question, KIBI.org and their recycling guide. Plastics are a tough question in general, but plastics 1 and 2 are the most easily recycled beverage containers. I'm holding right now a soda bottle that's – actually, this one is a plant bottle. So this is a new type of plastic, number one, that's made out of bio-based materials instead of petroleum. So, you know, to answer the questions, 1 and 2 are the two highly recyclable. It's your soda bottles and your milk jugs, a few others. I think over the next few years we'll see some changes in the way plastics are labeled because it's difficult to recycle so many of them. But
and how about the cereal boxes? Where should
I think there's
David
a number
Forsell,
of places. Yeah,
please.
A number of places throughout central Indiana. Again, I'd suggest the website. Also, if people are really interested in getting aggressive with the paper recycling, there are so many charitable organizations right now partnering with a company called Abibo, which has a funny name. I'm not even sure what it means. But it's the little green igloo-like containers that one might see anywhere around the city, green and yellow, where you can take any variety of paper products.
But not cereal boxes.
But not cereal boxes. But charitable organizations, you'll often find those in their parking lots, that sort of thing. Churches, Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, and IRC benefit from some of the sites. And we encourage folks to get out there and recycle some paper that way,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we love those paper retriever bins.
So what is the distinction here with cereal boxes, then? What's the issue there?
Cereal boxes are paperboard, and so they're a different grade of paper.
Okay.
And the paper retriever containers are just for a certain type of fiber, so they don't want paperboard or certain other, like cardboard. They also don't take cardboard corrugated. But most of the city drop-off sites where you have different types of recyclables collected will take paperboard and cardboard now.
Okay. So that would be a place to take
yes,
cereal
exactly.
boxes.
Yes, exactly. There you
then.
Go.
Okay. Okay. Greg, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment and see if you had any ideas of how to maybe remedy a situation.
We'll do our best.
I had my wife in the hospital, Community Hospital South, last summer, and they, as a service, provide a free copy of the Indianapolis Star every day. And I asked what they do with them afterwards, and they said they just throw them away. So I inquired, isn't there some way that these could be recycled? And they said that they they acted like they had no idea how to do that. And I said, well, how many papers are given out every day? And they said, oh, 200 to 300 every day. So I took mine home, but it seemed to me that would be a significant amount of paper to be able to be recycled. And a big organization like Community Hospital with 4 hospitals, I think, scattered in the central Indiana area, that'd be a lot of landfill from just one source that should be able to be recycled, I would think.
Greg, good question. We'll see if we can get an answer for you. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Carrie Hamilton, that one goes to you, I think.
Great question, Greg. Hospital waste in general is kind of a hot topic within the industry right now. There's so much material that comes out of hospitals that can and should be recycled, from the newspapers that you're talking about to the plastics and all of the medical devices and other instruments that have a one-time use. And there's a major movement within the hospital world to address sustainable materials management within their systems. There's progress being made right now. I know that St. Vincent's and Carmel has a very proactive recycling program, and I've heard from many other hospitals around Indianapolis, including within the community health system, that they're working hard to recycle more and sustainably manage their materials. So thanks for asking.
We're talking about Earth Day and the environment here on No Limits with our guests, Stephen Sellers, David Forsell, and Carrie Hamilton. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending comments or questions via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've talked an awful lot about the places where there have been gains, and we've... to use probably a somewhat appropriate metaphor, gained ground over recent years in terms of protecting the environment. Where are the biggest obstacles right now? Where are the biggest challenges? Who are, to put it even more bluntly, who are the worst offenders around? And I'll start with Stephen Sellers on that one.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
Thank you. No, that's okay.
That is really a tough one, and I'll give you one really good example. You've got some people in the oil industry that are doing everything they can to fund opposition to any environmental regulation, anything that would try to reduce our use of oil, and that is a very good example of something that is egregious and self-serving that isn't going to help our society. Oil is a very limited product. Mm-hmm. It's getting harder and more expensive to get, and more people around the world are using it. So,
yeah, basic economics, the supply is contracting and the demand is increasing, so the price is going to go up.
Exactly. And yeah. it is not sustainable. But you got a lot of folks that are funding organizations to put money essentially in their pockets, in the oil industry. So that would be an egregious problem. We have to start looking past oil as the fuel for our vehicles, and look to alternatives. The president of Ford Motor Company is begging Congress to decide, to give them a direction so they will know what to build in the future. And when we come back to green jobs, that is an example of what I'm talking about there. Decide, go forward, and you create jobs and you improve the economy.
Carrie Hamilton of the Indiana Recycling Coalition.
John, I'm going to kind of turn your question around and talk about another opportunity.
Okay. All right.
In Indiana, I have talked about relatively small amounts of investment in recycling in Indiana over the past few decades. And one of the fallouts of that is that we have very little public space recycling. But that's changing right now, especially in Indianapolis. I'm excited to be part of the Super Bowl green efforts. And I know that because of the substantial work being done to make our Super Bowl one of the greenest Super Bowls ever, if not the greenest Super Bowl ever, that there will be some permanent public space recycling that comes out of that. There will certainly be significant recycling at the event, and we'll see long-term investment in Indianapolis, especially downtown core, because of that. In addition, back to another earlier question about private involvement and volunteer support for efforts, one of the things we're doing right now is managing a public space recycling bin grant program. We have several programs, and that's one of them. It's sponsored by the Alcoa Foundation, which, of course, exists because of the aluminum industry. Mm-hmm. We have seen several applications to that grant, bin grant program, coming from volunteer organizations throughout Indiana that want to set up recycling at high school facilities or at a local college or a local park. So it's a really nice partnership between a private sector funded program and the communities across Indiana who want to increase recycling in their public areas.
We've gotten a question from a listener that's pretty specific, and I think it needs to be directed to Stephen, and that is for the Earth Day Indiana festivities this Saturday. Is there free parking?
Unfortunately, there is not. There used to be. We used to have free on-street parking on Saturday in Indianapolis. We don't anymore. So folks are going to have to look for the best parking opportunities.
Are there places where you're recommending they go?
I do. If you go to earthdayindiana.org and check, we do have some parking tips for you. And there are some lots that are nearby. Of course, Circle Center Mall is a great place for folks to park. You can shop, you can visit us, you can do a variety of things downtown. But there are some lots that are pretty close by.
We've also gotten an email question from Norma Blake, who lives down in Greenwood. It says, the subject of air quality came up earlier on your program. In the discussion of things being done to improve air quality, reducing automobile emissions was not mentioned. Many times recently, I have found myself behind or beside a car spouting such noxious fumes. Boy, that's tough to get out. That I find myself closing the vents in my car and cautioning my daughter not to breathe until we can get away from that vehicle. Many states, including even very conservative ones like Texas, have vehicle inspection laws. She goes on to say, basically, why don't we? To summarize, David Forsell.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can speak to that with any level of experience other than to say there's just been resistance. And it's interesting, I think, too, that you were talking about where are some of the places where we're falling a little bit short. I think part of it is either just a basic lack of appreciation for environmental quality, that it's not at top of mind for people in Indiana, generally speaking. I think that's our tradition. Maybe that's our history. I also think that's getting better. So I think there are just cultural barriers here that I think it's hard to pin down why exactly. Vehicle inspection stuff I can't speak to specifically.
The interesting thing is both Carrie and David are a whole lot younger than I am, so this happened before they would have probably even thought about driving, but Indiana used to have a law that required vehicle inspection.
I'm old enough to remember that too, Stephen.
So there you go. We did. Yeah. Now, one of the good things is as the older fleet dies off, the newer cars are better.
Yes,
so we are
yes.
at least reducing the problem that she mentions.
And as we've pointed out earlier in the program, the economic forces, the market forces at work now with the cost of fuel are driving people toward more environmentally sound choices. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am fine. We've got just a couple of minutes left, so could we get to your question? Thank you.
Yeah. I work for the University of Notre Dame, and they do something called single stream recycling, which really makes recycling easy. You throw in anything and everything that's recyclable except for maybe like batteries and electronics. And I was just curious if anyone is looking into that anywhere else in the state. They may outsource it with another company. I'm really not sure, but I'm sure they have more information about that on their website.
Good question. Thank you.
So,
Thank you, Kathy. Take care.
Kathy, yeah, that's
Carrie
a great
Hamilton.
Question. Thanks, Sean.
Sure.
There are several communities in Indiana that have single stream now, and that is definitely a trend in the industry to capture more material for exactly the reason you mentioned, and that's the convenience. When recycling is convenient, people will recycle more. And in fact, in Indianapolis, if you subscribe to the curbside program, that is what you receive, a large bin where all material is collected in one container.
And it's amazing. I'm a curbside recycler, and I'm easily recycling probably twice what I was, and very consistently throwing and disposing of much less than I'm recycling at this point. The convenience matter is huge. The size of the container is really significant, too. So that's a huge step forward.
We've only got about a minute left here, but this is a question I think when we're talking about pockets, places where things are happening. Is there a comprehensive statewide strategy for environmental protection? And if not, how do we go about getting one? Stephen Sellers.
The answer to that is going to depend on who you ask.
Okay. All right. I'm asking you at the moment.
What I'm going to say is come to the Earth Day Indiana Festival.
You're using your time to push and promote. Good.
Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., we've got a wide variety of exhibitors that won't agree on this subject. So ask them.
Carrie Hamilton, do we have a comprehensive? I'm going to give you about 20 seconds to get.
And I'm going to give my own answer as well. I really can't
I've completely
address
lost
that,
control
John.
Of this show,
you have.
All right.
I do want to just say that recycling is one of the easiest ways that we all can make a positive impact on the environment. So check out the websites that David and I mentioned. Learn how you can recycle various materials. Recycle all of your electronics, and you will be making a really positive difference for our environment in Indiana.
I'll give David Forsell a chance to answer that question very, very quickly.
I will nimbly avoid it as well,
okay.
But I want to say mytreeandme.org. If you go to that website, KIB is working with a variety of Central Indiana nurseries to provide $20 off the purchase of a tree. And so help the environment, help some local nursery folks.
David Forsell, Carrie Hamilton, Stephen Sellers, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, John.
Good to have you here. I hope we have you all back at some point. We've been talking about Earth Day and the environment, in particular about, as you probably gathered from the plugs at the end there, Earth Day Indiana and the celebration downtown this Saturday at White River Park. We're going to talk next week with a man whose name was mentioned pretty frequently during this show, Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard, as he launches his campaign for re-election. You've started seeing the signs pop up. We're going to talk about where the last 4 years have taken him and where he plans to take the city in the next 4 years. I am John Kroll, your host. Please join us next week. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Allseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. Board Engineers, Matt Sosi and Josh Hamig. And intern, Monica Schwab. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, and you can listen online at WFYI.org.